Welcome back. We're going to continue today talking about mission and vision. Now, last time we talked a little bit about mission, and you know, we tried to describe the distinction between vision and mission statements. We looked at some mission statements and tried to define those. And in that process, I did give you some of the material about vision. For instance, we talked about Anley Standing's idea about what vision does. He said it weaves together four things into the fabric of our daily experience. And what are those four things? Well, it's a passion, an anticipated future. In other words, there's something passionate about it. You know, when you read or hear that speech by Dr. Martin Luther King, he's passionate about it. The people were passionate about it. I don't think we can quite imagine today here in the United States what it was like to be a black man or a black woman or a black child back in 1963 when he made that speech. But as he created this wonderful picture of white and black children playing together, there was a passion that was aroused, and it was so powerful that it made those people be willing to be able to be beaten by police, to be arrested, to be put into jail, some of them killed in a variety of ways. It made them passionate because they're saying, this is what I want to see happen. This is what I want to see become reality. So passion. Vision weaves together passions, the passions of the people. Back when many, many sessions ago, back in session 7, when we interviewed Frank Weavers, he talked about that idea of passion, about God's people wanting to go somewhere, that we can't be just in this cycle of a church, doing the same thing over and over again, and people will get worn out doing that. They want to go forward, and they want a sense that God is leading us somewhere. So a good vision statement, a good vision that is presented to people includes this idea of passion. There's somewhere that we must go, not just could go, but we should go, we must go. So it's that idea of passion. It's an idea of motivation, that we are trying to be pulled forward into the future. It gives us a sense of where we're going and gives us some definition for it. In fact, we've talked about North Star, that image that we've been using of that kind of star out there, and it's a thing we measure ourselves by. Well, the vision is something that pulls us forward. One of the people I've referred to in these lectures is a man named Mark Batterson, pastor of National Community Church in Washington, D.C. And through a process that took a while, he developed a vision. And his vision was to plant all of these churches in movie houses because he saw all these theaters that weren't used on Sunday morning at all. And so it was a rather cheap rental place. And that's how they got started. And that's where they found their roots. And so he began doing this and presented it to the church. And they said, wow, what a thing that could be. What influence all over the country and beyond. And so they developed a vision statement about, you know, doing 20 of these in the next year, 20 new churches. And it was something that pulled people forward to do what they wanted to do. It provides direction. In other words, I told a story about Andy Stanley selling his musician equipment because he knew that wasn't the direction he was going. There are certain things that you say no to in order to say yes to when you've got a good vision working. I remember when I came to the church I last served, there was a group of people that wanted to start a counseling ministry. And they were well motivated. So a couple of them had degrees in counseling, had experience in counseling. And we began looking at what is going to be our mission and vision for the next stage of life as we started talking about strategic planning for the next 3 to 5 years for the life of that congregation. And it became very clear in the process as we did the investigative work that there were plenty of counseling centers, Christian counseling centers in town. There was opportunity to get there. One of them even charged on a sliding scale. And so we looked at that and said, you know, we really don't need that. That's not part of our vision. Our vision, I'll share with you the statement we came up with later, but it's involving growth within the congregation and growth within the individual and growth within the kids and the young adults and the teenagers that God had given us. And so that was our vision, and this didn't quite fit with what we were trying to do. Now, maybe we could have made it fit, but it gave us direction to say, okay, what are those things that are going to give us the best bang for our buck, colloquially saying? What's going to be the most effective in accomplishing this vision? So it gives direction, and it gives purpose. It gives a reason to get up in the morning to be engaged in doing what you're doing. And that's what a vision does. Now, you know, just to remind ourselves, I hate to go back and remind so much, but mission defines the present state or purpose of an organization and answers the three questions that we looked at as we were evaluating those mission statements last time. What does the organization do, who it does it for, and how it does what it does? That's the questions of a mission statement. But a vision statement, in contrast, defines a future state. This is what the organization wants over a period of time, what it wants to accomplish over a period of time. And so it's something that's there. A mission statement says this is what's here now. This is who we are. But this is what we are becoming. That's the vision statement, what we are becoming in the future. And so that gives guidance to long-range planning. We looked at that fact that it functions as a North Star, that idea of using the sextant by those sailors in years gone by to define where they are in relationship to the North Star, because that's defining how they can get where they are going and the corrections they got to make in order to get where they're going. And so it functions as a North Star. And a good vision statement is succinct and inspirational. So with that in mind, what are the characteristics of a good vision statement? Here are some that you should be aware of as you start thinking of making a statement. You may have an idea about where God is calling you, but unless you can articulate it and articulate it well and in a memorable way, the vision statement will not become reality. It'll be forgotten and put in a drawer somewhere. So what are the characteristics of a really good vision statement that summarize where God is calling you and your organization to go? Well, first of all, it's clear. It's not ambiguous. You know, I'll quote this one many times in the process of the next few weeks as we talk about vision, as we talk about Nehemiah's work in rebuilding the walls in Jerusalem. Nehemiah has done his groundwork. He's come to the city of Jerusalem. He's taken that nighttime ride around the city to see what shape it's really in. So he's got an idea of what's really going on there, what the need really is. He maybe has begun interacting with some of the people who have been living with that city and that state for years and years and years and years. And now he's ready to talk to them about the future. And he makes it very clear what he feels the vision for the future is. I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and we will no longer be in disgrace." It's clear. No ambiguity. What are we going to be doing in the future? We're going to be rebuilding that wall. That's the immediate future that God has called us to. That's a vision He's called us to. That's why God sent me here, Nehemiah says over and over again through the book of Nehemiah. So it's clear. No ambiguity about where we're going. I'm going there, and we are going here. Secondly, it's challenging. Now, it's challenging in a couple of ways. One, it's good to just have a challenge. You don't want to do something that's just easy. It doesn't involve God's work or God's spirit or the strength and power of God at work in you and through you. But it's also challenging because almost all visions require some level of change in us, some level of change in the way we do things here. Now, when we get moving towards strategic planning, we're going to have to talk about how some values that we've held in an organization maybe we'll have to change in order to meet the new reality or reach the new vision. But it involves change, and change is always, always painful for people. I was reading just this morning, and I neglected to bring the book along, but it's a book titled Who Moved My Pulpit by Tom Rainer. And Tom Rainer is a consultant here in the United States, and he just talks about how difficult change is for people, and he gives several illustrations. He said, you know, in the one church, it was unbelievable what happened when the pastor was deciding that in order to reach their vision of becoming an outward-focused congregation that was able to welcome people from the community in well, he had to change his style of preaching. And so he began gradually to experiment with fewer notes and not preaching from the manuscript as he did before. And then he realized as he was going through that process that he stood behind this massive pulpit every week to preach. And so he decided that that had to go. And instead he moved the pulpit out and he got this little lectern that he set there. And he said it was unbelievable the communications that he got. One person described him as, sent him an 8-page letter about how he was denying God's will, about he was reprobate, and this person writing him was going to find a way of getting him dismissed as pastor of that congregation, which in some traditions is a very real threat, and on and on and on, because of a simple thing like moving a pulpit. Change is threatening. In fact, in the book, Rainier listed 15 of his favorite reasons people fight within a church. And there are wacko reasons when you start looking at them, you know, about whether they should buy this copier or that copier. Or one deacon who accused another deacon in a church of sending an anonymous letter, and the other one denying it, and they end up taking their fight outside and actually engaged in a physical fight on the church grounds about how long the youth pastor's beard could be, and he could still be acceptable there, and all those kind of things. That's what the church can easily engage in if there is no vision to say, we've got to go there. And so it's challenging to present a vision. Now, here's a reality that could be helpful to you, and that is the longer you stay, the more likely you will have less and less criticism and less fighting and less challenge. But generally speaking, when you present a new vision to an organization, there's going to be a challenge of change. Now, here's a diagram. It's a bell curve. And what's listed on here is how people react to changes that are proposed. You note on the left side, there is that group called the innovators. 2.5% of people in generally are innovators. These are the people who, if you present a new idea for them, they're on board. You know, these are the people who are waiting in line for the new Apple phone because they don't want to wait a week and order it from somewhere and get it later. So they're ready to go. You present a new idea to them, a new vision, they're saying, yes, that sounds so good, and they're on board. Then there's the early adopters, 13.5%. These are people who, if you present it to them and it makes sense to them, they'll come on board and they'll say, yeah, well, I want to be part of that. Then there's the early majority, that 34% of the congregation or the organization or the community. 34% will be early majority. They'll be early adopters. They'll come in with you on the vision if they think the reasons are good enough. They're not just ready to jump on board, but if you give a well-reasoned argument or presentation about why this vision is what God wants for us at this time, they'll come on board and they'll say, yep, okay, we're with you. The late majority, again, 34%, are late adopters. In other words, they'll be more ones that are sitting back and saying, well, let's see how this all works out. And so they won't jump on board. Or maybe they'll vote for something, but they won't give to it. They'll vote for a building program, but you know, when it comes down to, hey, will you commit money to this? They're going to sit back and see how it works out. Or we're going to change our style of worship because we realize that in order to be relevant to our immediate community, we have to have a different style of worship than what we've had. And they'll sit back and say, well, let's see how this works out. And then hopefully they'll join on as momentum is built through a vision and people start seeing it making a difference. They'll come on board, but they're a late majority. And then there are the laggards. These are the people who are still working with flip phones, and they're saying it still works. Why should I get rid of this? They are not likely to be approving of the changes that you are recommending. And some of them will be critics. Now, this diagram doesn't say how many of those, how many percentage of people will come against any new vision just by matter of course, because they generally speaking are against everything. But you've got to know, when you are presenting a vision, it's got to be challenging. In other words, it's going to cause these people some anxiety, except for the innovators and maybe the early adopters, because what you are presenting is going to require them to change. So it's got to be challenging, and it's got to be a mental picture. Moses on Mount Nebo is an example of that. He sees this wonderful picture, and somehow, you know, he writes it down in the book of Deuteronomy. As he stands on Mount Nebo, and he's given this vision of the promised land, and he's telling the people all the time, it's a land filled with milk and honey. It's a land, it's a beautiful land. Send in the spies earlier, and they come back and affirm, this is a wonderful land. And so he pictures all of the beauty that's coming if the people will just go in and obey God and take the land, live out the vision. Now, you know they had failed to do that 40 years earlier. But now, once again, he's up there and he himself isn't going to enter the promised land, but he draws a picture for the people of what it's going to be like. And so it involves a picture. King's speech, about Martin Luther King's speech. What incredible pictures he drew in that speech. That's a secret to, as I said before, it's good preaching, it's good teaching, but certainly in proclaiming a vision to create pictures of who's going to benefit, create pictures about how this is going to look when we've attained this vision, when we've reached this vision. Now, you know, as I said, when we talked about Martin Luther King's speech, you know, there are questions today whether it's been realized or not. In many cases here in the United States, it has not. And that's still something we should be grieving about here yet today. But there has been progress made in the process of becoming more equal as a race. Now, I lived in Southern California when my children were young. And I remember when my second child, a daughter, was 7 years old. And she came home one day and had somehow become aware that there were differences between her and her best friends. And so she came in to our house, and in a reflective moment that was almost humorous, she said, "You know, my best friend Gina is brown, a Hispanic girl who lived a few doors down. She played with regularly. And she said, my second best friend is browner. That was Rachel, African American. And then she looked at herself and she said, I'm just sort of beige." But for her, there were no differences in that ethnic difference. And so when I look at that, I think, oh, I thank God for Martin Luther King, who challenged us, who led us in looking at each other in different ways than trying to define us by our race, so that my child could not look at people and judge them by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character, which is one of the statements from Martin Luther King. So yes, so you create pictures, and people say, yes, that's what I want. So it's a mental picture of the future. It's also future-oriented. It's not looking back at the past. You can do that in the history, and you can do that in the background to why you've come to the vision you've had, but it's something that's looking at short-term and maybe long-term. Nehemiah's vision was a short-term vision. I mean, it was just a matter of a couple of months, and they had those walls built. It was an incredible feat, one that was powerful. But it took a short time. So that was the short-term vision. Now, long-term vision would be more like what people had here in the United States, for good or ill, and that was that there was this idea about manifest destiny, that it was the destiny of the United States to take over the entire middle of the continent. And so people began, you know, driving out the Indians because, you know, this is what our vision is. We're going to even control the whole thing. And so buying the middle section, the Louisiana Purchase, buying a section from Russia for Alaska, but fighting a war over the western states. But this is where we're going. We want to own. That's a long-term vision. So it's future-oriented. It's saying, this is what I want to happen, what I want the future to become by God's grace. And then finally, it is achievable. It is something that can be reached. Now, one of the people I think of is this man, a person on the left. His name is Dan Brink, a friend of mine in Southern California. He accepted a call to a church that had been declining in numbers for years and years and years and years. It's a Christian Reformed church, and they came here in 1800s. A group of Dutch people came to the United States, and they began establishing churches in various places. Wherever those immigrants from the Netherlands came, they settled and they started these churches. And they also started Christian schools alongside of them so that the children could be educated there rather than in the public schools. And this church had noticed that people had moved out of the community and that the birth rate was going down, their membership was going down, their ability to pay bills was going down. And Dan accepted a call to this congregation. And then after being there for a little while, he said, you know, if this church is going to survive and thrive and be everything that God calls it to be, I think there's a vision for another future. We've got to explore that. So they hired a consultant to come in. And he led them through this process, a process similar to what we'll get to later when we talk about strategic planning. And then in one of the meetings where they had various people involved in small groups and large groups, small group, large group over the night as they talked about what was God calling them to, They came up with this wild list of things that were going to change the basic culture and the core values of the congregation. And the consultant had told Dan beforehand that his job was then to get up and say, we can't do this. Said it's going to cost money. It's going to cost a lot of our energy. It's going to cost some people here who aren't going to agree with the way we're going, and they're going to leave us. Said, I don't think we can do this. And said the consultant then said, my role is to come up and say, you know, you've all got a choice here today. You can continue doing what you do until you die. Or you can say, yes, we can do this. We can do this. And they voted. The church went through a change. The man in the middle is the Hispanic director of the Spanish-speaking church that they have within their facility. And the woman on the right is on staff there as the ministry coordinator in that congregation. But it's achievable. And here's just one picture of a church that was dying 20 years ago. And look at this group of people who are going out on a mission together. It's a thriving congregation. So the characteristics are it's clear, it's challenging, it involves change, it's a mental picture, it creates a picture of where we're going, and it is achievable. Let's look at some statements, some vision statements, and just say, do they have these characteristics? For instance, Alzheimer's Association. Our vision is a world without Alzheimer's disease. Wow. Now that's a powerful vision. Anybody who's seen anyone suffer from Alzheimer's, who's been a caregiver or has had a family member or a friend who developed Alzheimer's, they'll say, yes, I want to be part of that. I'll be part of that. I'm going to sign on. I'm going to give money. Because I'm committed to this too. That's the future. So that's one. Microsoft, another great vision statement. Of course, they've got professionals working on this sort of thing. Empower people through great software anytime, any place, and on any device. Wow. That's clear. It creates a passion for some people more than others. But it's achievable. They're working on it. And they're becoming more and more achievable. It's a lovely kind of vision statement that has given guidance to their correction, or they're giving guidance to their decisions for years and years and years. Now let's look at some church ones, and ones we've looked at. Impacting 100,000 Phoenix area residents by the year 2020. Now, the nine behind there, I got this off the internet. I just asked for vision statements of churches. And so Christ Church of the Valley in Peoria, Arizona came up, and this is their vision statement. Now, it certainly is forward thinking, certainly is future thinking, certainly is creates a mental picture. 100,000 people. Now, there might be some visuals that would go along with that that would really help that, but it creates that idea of we're moving forward. It's challenging. Don't know how big this church is. I don't know anything about this church, but I know that if you're going to impact 100,000 people by the year 2020, and this probably was made in 2015, that's an amazingly challenging experience. And one that people will say, yeah, I'm about a church that's impacting the community, that's outwardly focused, I'm on board. The nine is the number of words. And so in this website, it lists the number of words for each one because they're trying to say it's got to be concise. Okay, let's look at some of the others. The Potter's House in Dallas, Texas, a well-known congregation here in the United States. We are the voice and the hand that encourages people to change their lives with hope, comfort, and peace. You know, if I were there, I'd say, let's redo that one. I'm not so sure it's challenging. I think it's more of a mission statement than it is a vision statement. It doesn't say where they're going. It just says, this is who we are. And so I'm not real excited about that one. A New Spring Church in Anderson, South Carolina, to continue growing, impacting lives, and using technology and the arts to reach 100,000 people for Jesus Christ. Now, there's a challenging kind of statement. It's clear, 100,000 people. And this is something of the how we're going to do it. We're going to do it with technology and the arts. And that's going to create us a growing congregation and all the implications of that, which we'll talk about later. A Perimeter Church in St. John's Creek, Georgia, or John's Creek, Georgia. Now, Perimeter Church is an interesting congregation because it was started by a man named Randy Pope. And Randy had a vision for creating a string of churches that would be the perimeter of Atlanta. So they are on one of the perimeter churches and perimeter highways, freeways. And so the idea was to populate within easy driving distance that entire area with churches. Well, here's their vision statement: to make and deploy mature and equipped followers of Christ for the sake of family, community, and global transformation. Some nice things about that, I guess. But wow, when I look at that vision, I think, you know what? We are going to be about changing the city of Atlanta. And we're going to do that by establishing churches at regular intervals. And these churches are going to be committed to making disciples of Jesus Christ and then deploying them so that people's lives are changed in their families and their community. And through that, to impact the world with missions that are going out and being funded, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that one could be a whole lot more exciting. Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church is a church that is a richly honored Kennedy method of evangelism came out of that congregation. That method that started with those two questions, you know. If you were to die tonight, do you know that you'd go to heaven? And if you were to die tonight and go to heaven, and you'd stand before Jesus, and he were to ask you, why should I let you into heaven, what would your answer be? And it was a method that was used for decades in training people to share their stories and to share the gospel story in a very engaging way. So this is a church that has a history. It started with 12 people and grew to thousands. And Pastor Kennedy is now in heaven. But this is their statement: to rescue and replenish a world lost and broken by sin, thereby making all things new. I don't know about you, but that just doesn't excite me a whole lot. If I could rewrite that one, I would probably rewrite it to say, yeah, we're about seeing lost and broken people meet Jesus Christ, who can make a difference in their life and restore their dignity and heal them and make all things new. And we're about doing that within this community, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You get the idea. Redeemer Presbyterian Church, Tim Keller's church in New York. Now, they obviously are community-oriented. This is a thriving congregation. And their vision statement is to build a great city for all people, in other words, the city of New York, through a gospel movement that brings personal conversion, community formation, social justice, and cultural renewal to New York City and through it to the world. Now, again, similar to the other one, I don't find that to be real, one that creates passion. Whereas you could say, we envision New York changed because of the presence of a gospel, of churches that are engaged in a gospel movement, that are reaching out to people to introduce them to Jesus Christ, who can transform their lives, etc. So, and then this one we've seen from Saddleback, and I didn't read through this whole thing. I think this thing could be rewritten in a very powerful way if you just took some statements from it. As such, it's just too big. Nobody's going to remember this stuff. But if you just took some phrases out of here and made it into a vision statement, so using that, it's a dream. You know, it's a dream of sharing the good news of Jesus Christ in this area so 20,000 people join our church over the next several years. It's the dream of equipping believers for significant ministry so that they're deployed in doing God's work. It's the dream of sending out career missionaries and church workers around the world. It's a dream. If you just use that and shorten that up, you could make that into a very powerful and wonderful statement of vision. Now, I tried to make myself vulnerable last time by sharing what our mission statement was in my previous church was, we exist to help each other take the next step in our relationship with Jesus Christ by gathering, growing, and going. Here's our vision statement, and it's one that we're going to look at later because after doing this study for this session, if I could redo this one, I'd love a chance to do that. I'd do it again in a heartbeat. But our vision statement was to grow larger. And we'd explain that by saying it's not just to be big, but so that we can have a greater impact on this community in the name of Jesus. To grow deeper, and that is to create people who are moving along those steps of the Willow Creek growth spectrum. And then to grow younger, or to reach the next generation. That's our vision statement. As I look at it, not very exciting, not very clear, not very concise, and so I'd love to have a chance to redo that. So anyway, so this is the beginning of what does it take to make a vision statement? It takes these kind of activities. It takes thinking through things in this way as far as what is the future, what is it going to look like, and how do I engage people with mental pictures that are exciting and that create passion toward the future. So next time we're going to continue this discussion. See you then.